Let me know. Or there it is. Okay, it's recording. So while we're waiting for people to log in, I'll do the land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gayokono, the Paiute Nation. The Gayokono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of the Gayokono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of the Gayokono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. And I want everyone to know that this land acknowledgement has been reviewed and approved by the traditional Gayokono leadership. And so today we are here to discuss enabling legislation for our ability to add all ranks of a teaching professor title to approved academic titles. And we have members of the Teaching Professor Title Task Force, T4. And so we have members here to answer questions if needed. And really, this is a forum for people to provide feedback so that if there's need for revision, that can happen before the next Faculty Senate, where we'll actually have a presentation of the enabling legislation and resolution. And so the next Faculty Senate meeting is on April 10th from 3:30 to 5, and that's where the presentation will happen. And if you just put your hand up, we'll just start the conversation, and I will send recordings of the I'll send recordings of today's forum to certain administrators so that they're aware of the feedback, and then we'll move forward with our Senate discussion and vote. So if anyone wants to start the conversation, just put up your virtual hand and we'll get started. And if people are feeling shy about getting started, I was going to say, Michael, you might want to start the conversation.
It felt like an appropriate thing to do. I just want to start, if I might, by recognizing the task force members, if that's all right. So this was the teaching track title task force T4. In some recent emails, some words in that phrase have gotten mixed around. No one can keep which word is in which spot straight, I think. So we just stick with T4. These are the people I want to acknowledge who have helped to do the work on this proposal. We had representation from just about every college, many associate deans. We had RTE faculty on it, and Charlie Van Loan and I co-chaired it. I will apologize that Charlie is unable to attend today as he's traveling internationally. If there aren't any immediate questions, I could, of course, go through some of the basics of the proposal, although I see we do have a question now.
It might not hurt to have like a 2-minute summary of the five documents, and then George will be the first person
Okay, that's fine.
to be back.
For sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. So let me put that back up here. So we had a charge from Eve as Dean of Faculty to develop a proposal and Senate resolution for a teaching professor title following the enabling legislation approach that was used for the previous RTE professorial titles. That enabling legislation is designed so that colleges and schools can customize their own implementation of a teaching professor track to address their specific educational goals. There were a number of things that fell outside of that charge, but are worthy of follow-up as our task force has recommended, including an extension professor title, possibly in the future, as the next thing that should be investigated separately, just like research professor was investigated separately, just like clinical professor was, and so forth. For those that are not familiar with the enabling legislation approach, Instead of making the teaching professor track available automatically across the whole university, colleges have to submit a proposal to the Senate in which they explain why and how they intend to implement the new track. This is what has been used for the other RTE professorial titles. And so if folks support the resolution, that means they support the outline proposal content and the associated approval process. It doesn't necessarily mean that they support creating a track in their own college at the current time. As we've seen with the other professorial titles, some colleges will adopt them more or less slowly, depending on the particular needs that they have within their own unit. The title creation then happens, and there's a procedure for it. I won't go into details on that, but it does include a vote within the own college in which the tenure track and RTE faculties are tallied separately to indicate that there is support for the particular instantiation of the title within that unit. So we've put up some documents to explain some things like, why do we need teaching professors? What would an appointment look like? And how would the colleges go through that? So let me just very briefly explain each one of those as an overview of the documents, as you've suggested. There's three reasons why Cornell could benefit from having a teaching professor track. One is recruiting and retention. For some units, including especially my own, it's hard to compete with peer institutions who can offer professorial level teaching titles. Another reason is that the lecturer track is two-tier and was designed and implemented nearly 50 years ago. It's not really as well suited for professional growth and innovation as a well thought out three-tier teaching professor track would be. There's also a possibility of improving our degree programs through this. A well-designed TP track would have especially positive impact in any place that teaching professors work, which often, although not exclusively, is at the undergraduate level, just as the other RTE professorial titles have had benefits as well for degree programs. And the third reason is equity. About 35% of all credit hours taught on campus are delivered by 500 plus full-time faculty on the lecturer, clinical professor, and professor of practice tracks. And of those faculty, about 70%, 370 people, are on the lecturer track. So unfortunately, with the current set of titles available, Cornell is implicitly saying that not one of those lecturer track faculty is deserving of a professorial level appointment, which I don't believe to be true. The title description is part of this. We have to provide a title description that would go into the faculty handbook. And the title description for any title in the handbook is typically quite general because it has to accommodate what that title can mean as it's instantiated in all of the different units across campus. So that means there has to be a lot of flexibility. It can't be overly prescriptive. So here are three features that our task force worked on in crafting a title description. I'll give you the overview of it and then the actual text here. The overview, number one, is level and quality. The quality should be comparable to what's expected along the tenure track. Just as it's impossible to give a university-wide definition of quality for the tenure track, and in fact, the documents in the faculty handbook explicitly say that, we don't think it's possible to give a university-wide definition for teaching professors here, but we can point to what it means. Teaching professor titles are available only for long-term non-tenure track faculty members whose efforts are devoted primarily to the teaching mission of the university and whose skill and independence are at the level of the tenure track faculty, with assistant, associate, and full teaching professors expected to achieve a similar level of professorial expertise as their counterparts on the tenure track. There should be impact beyond the immediate classroom or seminar or lab or studio, whatever it might happen to be. The title description that we've drafted says teaching professors at higher ranks can demonstrate impact inside and outside the university through activities such as pedagogical innovation, curriculum development, and leadership roles. And the third piece of the title description is university and external level service, whatever that might look like within a unit. There are expectations. So consistent with their rank and local needs, teaching professors are also expected to contribute teaching-related service, especially in areas that concern advising, mentoring, curriculum, and the management of degree programs. As far as the enabling legislation itself, there are a lot of pieces to it. You may have seen some of them if you've looked at the documents. Let me just briefly summarize some of the pieces that have to be part of it. A unit has to justify its need for the title. It has to describe what a teaching professor position would look like as instantiated inside that unit, what the expectations would be there. It has to outline processes for appointment, renewal, and promotion. It has to explain limitations regarding scope and numbers. It has to list the voting and other rights that will be extended to teaching professor faculty. And it has to discuss the impact on nearby titles and how transitions will be handled. And the last thing I want to do is say four things about how that works then. As far as transition processes, those need to be outlined as part of any college's response to the enabling legislation. It needs to answer questions like, are transitions automatic? If so, how will they occur? How could transitions be considered by application? If so, if they do it that way, when will that occur? And how would the destination teaching professor rank be determined? We know that divisiveness can be a concern here with the transition process, but we also know that divisiveness already exists by the sheer virtue of the existence of the clinical professor, professor of practice, and research professor titles, which have excluded people who have been on the lecturer track from a professorial title for a while now, and in fact introduced parallel tracks for which these people were never able or eligible to apply because they didn't have the clinical or the industrial experience. So the teaching professor title here is designed to improve equity. To guard against erosion of the tenure system, all of these kind of RTE professorial title enabling legislations have traditionally included some sort of limitation on the number of positions that can be created. The same is true here. One possibility of doing that, certainly not the only method, a unit can come up with its own method, but one possibility we put forth is to bound the number of teaching professors who exist in the unit, indeed not just teaching professors, but all of the people who teach as a fraction of the faculty.
Right.
So, I'm hearing some feedback here from someone else.
If someone can just, if everyone could just mute, that would be great.
Right. So, for example, it could be 45% of the faculty in the unit who teach at most could be RTE teaching faculty. Other instantiations are possible. And degree requirements. It's been typically the case for some of the others that there have been degree requirements that say it has to be a PhD or something like that. And indeed, I imagine that in enabling legislation responses from units, some units may say we want teaching professors to hold PhDs, but other units may not. For example, maybe what is needed is a JD or DVM, or maybe there doesn't even exist a PhD level degree in the field of instruction. Maybe an MFA suffices. Maybe it's a modern language, which basically no degrees exist in, but someone does teach it. So in situations where such degrees don't exist, the proposal needs to identify alternative degree requirements and also explain whether higher TP ranks would entail higher degree requirements. Finally, job security and scholarly leave. The proposal should address the extent to which the reappointment procedures afford teaching professors a measure of job security, recognizing that the track, as said in the title description, is intended for long-term members of the faculty. One way to address that would be to minimize the process needed for reappointments. That would convey that kind of long-term status. And finally, the proposal should indicate the extent of support for regularly scholarly leave for teaching professors that could be used to benefit the educational mission of the unit. Okay, that is my not 2 minute summary, Eve, but it is a summary.
It is a very good summary. Thank you, Michael. And we'll start with George. Oh, George disappeared. So we'll start with Elliot.
I'd like to defer to George since he got his hand up, and also he's the director of my program, and I'd like to hear what he has to say before I follow him. So, George, if you're out there, can I yield to you? Eva, is it okay if I yield to
George? Yes, of course. Yes, George.
Yeah. I was very excited by this possibility, but there are a couple things that concern me. I've actually been suggesting for several years that we have a teaching professor track, because as director of the Knight Institute, we have, you know, a lot of excellent teachers, but they rarely win teaching awards because of the way the teaching awards are defined, the criteria and so forth, in terms of the number of students. But all of our lecturers, they're actually all senior lecturers now, they all have PhDs. They all not only teach extremely well, but they have they teach people how to teach. That's a big part of their job. They teach new TAs or the people who will become TAs how to teach first-year writing seminars. They teach professors and lecturers and others how to incorporate writing instruction into their classes, lecture classes, and so forth. They run tutoring programs across the whole campus and so on and so forth. And they're also, most of them are also active professionally in various ways. And I had been on a review committee for Johns Hopkins that had a teaching professor role position for people like this. And the thing that concerns me is that if by each unit you mean that the Knight Institute would be a unit, if we were restricted to just 45% or something like that, this could create huge problems because, frankly, they all do all of these different jobs that have to do with teaching. And they are teaching professors. You know, they're not just teaching classes to undergraduates or grad students. They're teaching grad students how to teach and teaching professors how to teach and so on and so forth. So that's my main concern. And I guess the difference that we'll make in salaries has not yet been determined, but that's another open question, obviously.
George, thank you for that feedback. If I may respond to it, by units here, we mean colleges.
Okay.
And furthermore, the number 45, although it is only a model, to be clear, it was chosen because we believe every college already satisfies that number.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Elliot, please.
Thank you. And thanks to George for your comments. As I mentioned, I am a member of the Knight Institute. I'm one of those senior lecturers George mentioned who devotes a lot of my time, not just to teaching undergraduate students, but also to training teachers in a variety of fields. First year writing seminar teachers, writing in the majors, TAs, and a lot of work with faculty. As someone who's been doing this a really long time, I do think this is long overdue. And I think a lot of my questions, Michael, you answered in your presentation. And I just want to say how grateful I am for the work the committee has done and for the way you've presented this. I guess I just sort of want to go on the record. I mean, the presentation, Michael, makes it very clear that each college has to design their own teaching professor track, as they did with previous things like clinical professor and professor of the practice. And, you know, I guess each college is its own unit, and so there's little that the faculty senate or anyone else can do to suggest how they do it. But one of the things that some of us were quite aware of when the professor of the practice title was implemented in arts and sciences in my college, and then I wrote letters to anyone who would listen, was that this was going to turn a two-tier system into a three-tier system, which is exactly what happened. The professor of the practice title, as it was implemented in arts and sciences, quite explicitly excluded continuing lecturers and senior lecturers. It was designed to recognize different kinds of professional expertise than were already represented in the lecture titles that were sort of deeply embedded in arts and sciences. What this has meant, I'll just mention three examples. One is a salary range that I happened to see a document that I probably wasn't supposed to see, but that professors of the practice get paid more than continuing lecturers like I do. And I should say I've been doing this for over 20 years, approaching 30 years, I think even. The second thing is, this is a small matter, but every year there's like an arts and sciences newsletter about the new faculty we've hired this year. And that includes all the tenure stream faculty and the professors of the practice. And I've written to the communications office and said, I guess continuing lecturers aren't newsworthy. Can you explain this? But yes, hiring lecturers is not newsworthy. And then there are opportunities. Like, I recently became aware of a research grant that is open to professors of the practice and tenure stream faculty. Now, it may be professors of the practice won't get this and continuing lecturers wouldn't either. But what I pointed out, as I've pointed out on other occasions, is that professors of the practice and senior lecturers have identical terms of employment, a 3-3 teaching load or equivalent in administrative work, reviews every 5 years, with no expectation of research, with expectations of teaching excellence. And yet there's support for them to do research and there's not the support available to continuing lecturers. And this, all of these things point to the inequity in what currently exists. I gather that arts and sciences is open to a more equitable arrangement should this be implemented. But I just sort of wanted to go on the record to say how important it is, how much this equity point matters, and how much it matters how each college chooses to implement this. And that I hope that whatever influence is available to your committee, to the dean, to the faculty senate, to argue for each college to see this as a way to to level the playing field for people who have been contributing to the university in really substantive ways for decades, hundreds and hundreds of us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Elliot. Anyone else? So I should let you know that all of these comments will be sent to academic human resources, to multiple Senate committees, and also the provost and deputy provost. And so this is an opportunity for you to put things on the record, just the same way that Elia just did, so that when your college dean is informed of this conversation, they'll see this content and receive this feedback. So this is, I see this as an opportunity to provide that.
If I might also add as a response, Elliot, I hear so many of the things that you were saying as someone who is a senior lecturer in a unit that adopted research professor and professor of the practice titles. I won't repeat all of what you said. Instead, let me also offer the following comment, which is about the enabling legislation. In their response to this, the colleges are going on record publicly to the Senate with their plan for the design of it in their own unit. There will be review from CAP as a Senate committee to ensure that the response from the college does in fact meet the requirements of the enabling legislation. And all of the documents that the college needs to invent, we are encouraging those to go online or in some central place publicly so that our procedures for appointment and reappointment and promotion can be seen by other colleges and we can learn from each other on that. Yeah, thanks.
Yes, Elliot, keep going.
Yeah, thanks. If I can just jump in. Michael, that's great. I really appreciate it. And I just wanted to add one minor point to what I just said, which is that when I mentioned the research resources available to continuing lecturers, you know, I just to note, like those of us who went into this career didn't go into it to not do research. You know, however we ended up not on a tenure track, it doesn't mean we lost all of our interest in publishing and doing research and writing and whatever else is involved. But obviously there's a lot less institutional support in the form of research budgets and leave time and grant opportunities. And so even these small things that may be available to someone with professor in their title who's doing the exact same work, I mean, that can feel like a really significant loss. Or a really significant lost opportunity. So again, thank you. I just wanted to point that out, that it's not that the continuing lecturers don't have research ambitions or that professors of the practice don't have research ambitions. It's just that it's less tied to what we are expected to do, what the institution expects of us, and how the institution supports us. Thank you. I'll shut up now.
Thank you. And actually, it would be great if when you speak, if you introduce yourself and your department. I think that's also helpful, your department and college, I think. So Catherine, please.
Steve, Catherine Caggiano, Operations Research and Information Engineering, in the College of Engineering. Again, let me add my thanks to Michael and Charlie and the committee for putting this really thoughtful body of work together on behalf of so many of us. I just wanted to, and it's probably obvious to everybody here that, right, however thoughtful a college may be in putting together enabling legislation for this, I'm a little bit just concerned about what will happen to the lecturer and senior lecturer titles in the interim, right? So it's sort of the period between there may be colleges who put together very thoughtful legislation about how they're going to handle and manage and transition probably many of their RTE faculty. I guess I'm concerned about, all right, well, what does that mean in the interim for the college?
You mistakenly muted yourself, Catherine. So what does that mean for the...
I did that. Oh, wow. Apologies. Apologies.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Catherine. I did that.
It's okay. My husband tries to do it all the time. It's really a worthwhile.
It was not intentional.
I'm sorry. I'm not sure where I got cut off.
So that interim between
so Okay, so right during the transition period where perhaps and I'm guessing CIS may be taking the lead on this. It's just a guess, right? And I certainly hope actually that they do. And I think many other colleges will be looking right to that to try and understand right what some best practices might be and or some hopefully not too many pitfalls to sidestep. But I am concerned about what happens to the lecturer and senior lecturer titles and that track in the interim, in the years in the interim, and what that might mean for those who are in units or colleges who choose not to adopt legislation, or at least who choose perhaps to adopt legislation that is so very different from what other units might do, that this actually turns into really creating divisions that weren't intended. I mean, I realize this is sort of a kind of a necessary kind of risk that we have to take, given that we have so many colleges. I'm just wondering, what actions, if any, can we take, or what kind of guardrails or scaffolding can be put in place, right, to ensure that those who are in, well, I'll probably just stating the obvious here, but lecturers and senior lecturers in colleges who are, not first early adopters, might experience.
I can say that some colleges will replace lecturer, senior lecturer. Some colleges want to keep all of those potential titles there, and then we'll have to delineate the difference between them. So it really is agnostic to what someone should do. So it's intentionally created so that each college and school can create its own relationship. So it is a
I
risk.
understand that, right? And I understand why it's that way. I'm just voicing concern in the interim about, right, what might happen to people.
Agreed. And one of the things that we will make sure that we are is efficient when these things come to us. We'll get them posted immediately so they can meet that 60-day criterion before we take it to the Senate. So it just, or before we vote on it in the Senate. So we'll try to be as efficient as possible, especially as we begin this process. Joseph?
Thank you, everyone. I'm Joseph Sullivan. I'm a senior lecturer in sociology. And, thank you, Michael, for preparing all the materials. And, in one of your reports, I don't remember which one it was, you have this historic perspective that at some point the tenure track dedicates more and more of its time and resources to graduate students, while the lecturer track focuses on the undergraduates. And, I just want to say something that comes up with me is that, I mentor a lot of students. And as I mentor undergrads, and as I mentor them, they live their lives and they finish Cornell and they want to go on to things of prestige, whether it be jobs or especially graduate schools, and they want to go to the best graduate schools. So it's time for letters of recommendation. And I do their letters of recommendation, but I have to tell I have to have a talk with them. I have to say, listen, I'm going to do your letter of recommendation. I'm going to do it on Cornell University letterhead. It's going to look good. But at the end, it's going to say Dr. Joseph Sullivan, senior lecturer. And that is not a very prestigious thing. And so having a transition where my title got changed would really benefit them. And I agree with the other equity stuff too. That's great, and that would be cool. And I get insulted all the time because I'm a senior lecturer and not something else. But, that's a concern that I really have. And in the end, I think that some of them, it's an awkward thing to have this system where, they need to turn to the professors in their classes who get to know them so that they can be supported as they make the transition from Cornell elsewhere. Well, guess what? The people in their classes are their lecturers and their senior lecturers. And so this is something that directly impacts them. And so I'm in favor of doing this. Thank you.
Thank you, Joseph. Denise, and make sure you say your unit and your college, please. That'd be great.
Great, thanks. Hi, I'm Denise Ramsey. I'm a senior lecturer in Dyson in the College of Business, also in CALS, and a faculty senator. So I'm so thrilled to have, you know, about the development of all of this work. I'm so appreciative to the committee. This is really wonderful, and I think very much needed. My concern is about each of the units taking on their own definition of this. I think that particularly when it comes to voting rights, when it comes to transition, the differences between the colleges are going to start to feel a bit weird. We all are at Cornell. And yes, I know the colleges operate very independently, but it's a bit strange to think that, you know, you can have a teaching professor over here who had rights of this and could go on sabbatic and various other things, and somebody else who had something different. And also where the, you know, the transition was different. So you have to be X in order, you have to have a PhD, or you have to have this, or you have to have been there for however many years to do this. And we're going to give you a contract of 10 years. Whereas in another college, it's something very different. I just feel like we're already siloed enough. These differences would start to feel very strange when, you know, I'd like to think of us all as, you know, working together. It poses a particular issue for those of us who are in multiple colleges, right? And there are a number of departments, particularly in CALS. I'm not so familiar with other colleges, but particularly in CALS, I think there's at least six of us where we straddle colleges. So, you know, Dyson's in the College of Business and in CALS. And often we say that the College of Business is like the main college, but it's not really meant to be. So I guess I wonder, would things fall under CAL's definition? Would it fall under JCB? Could I choose the better one? Right. It starts to get kind of sticky. So I do wonder about that. And I'm wondering if there's a way that we could have a set of best practices across colleges, or a set of kind of minimum standards that every college had to at least adopt. And then maybe they make changes from there, but something so there's some parity. Thank you.
I don't, Michael, you might also want to comment, but my two comments are, one, it's going to be tied to where your salary line comes from. So if you are hired through CALS, then it would be legislated through CALS. And then, because we do have a lot of those multi-college units now, so that would be the likely way to do this. And the second is that faculty will vote at the college level on the legislation or the proposal that's brought forward to the Senate. And so all of these have to be tied to all faculty, knowing tenure track and RTE faculty will vote. And we need a minimum of 2/3 faculty that vote on it. And I think it's a majority vote approval.
Yeah, that's right. That's the voting structure for it. And so just to plus one, a bit of that, you know, the RTE faculty within a college actually has to bless the proposal that is put forth by that college and say, yes, this is a good thing and what we want. The notion that things can be very different in various colleges is actually circumscribed in some ways by both the enabling legislation and the university bylaws. For example, as one of my committee members has pointed out to me, university bylaws wouldn't allow a contract of 10 years. For any of these titles, it has to be 5. And that's standard across the whole university, at most 5. What can be different is appointment and reappointment procedures within units. And so that is a place where it could end up looking different in one unit versus another. However, these documents we're encouraging all of this to be open and public and transparent. And so what I hope is that it lifts us all up, so that we can see what are the best practices. And yes, you mentioned, is Bowers CIS going to do something about this? I might or might not have talked to it with my dean about that earlier. Like, you know, we don't want to jump the gun. We have to wait. We have to let all of this play out and get all of the feedback that's necessary. But once this happens, and I believe it will happen, I trust that it will happen, I hope to be part of the team moving early on that. Yeah.
Thanks.
Hadass.
Hadass Ritz, Mechanical and Aerospace Engineering in the College of Engineering. I'm going to try to ask the question that I think Catherine was trying to ask, although maybe I misunderstood and her question was answered. What do you think that the time frame over which the different units instituted, for example, the clinical professor, professor of practice titles, do we expect the rate of implementation of these teaching professor titles to be similar to that? What was that time frame? Like, are we talking about 5 years where some, you know, senior lecturers have been promoted to teaching faculty, teaching professor titles, and some haven't in different units? I mean, that's the kind of inequity that I'm not going to be happy about as we're in the middle of it.
I would say start the conversation with your dean now is what I would say, because it does, and to communicate and persuade that this is going to be a potential inequity across the university. I will do my best also at in dean spaces to communicate all of this. But I think that it's not enough that it comes from the Office of the Dean of Faculty. I think they want to hear from the faculty as well. And so if you want to share this conversation with your deans and your associate deans to start that now, invite them to the Senate in April, like just because I wasn't in this position when clinical professor and professor of the practice, but I do know that some of those came along years later. And so if this is critical to you and your peers in the college, then start the conversation now.
I mean, I think one problem with that, Eve, is that, you know, RTE faculty are disempowered in some way, right? Like there's a limit to the amount of pressure that, you know, senior lecturers can put on the dean of the college. So that, sure, yes, for sure. And also, I don't know how effective that's going to be. So it sounds like there's just no idea of how long it's going to be.
Could I offer some data?
Oh, that would be amazing. Yes, Michael.
Here is the Senate website professorial title legislation page, which has the timestamps for when the enabling legislation was created and when the colleges responded to it. So let's look at professor of practice. That happened in April 2014. And by 2016, most of the people who adopted it had done so. Some others came along much later. Bowers, by the way, didn't exist back then, so don't hold that against us, please. So it can happen quickly is the good news there.
And please start the conversation. I know that you think that your voice doesn't have impact, but I think you'd be surprised by that. And I surely will do my part. Yes, Daisy, unit and college, please.
Yes, hi, I'm Daisy Fan in computer science in our CIS. So first, thanks very much to Michael and Charlie and the rest of the committee who has done so much already. I don't have any solution to offer, and really I'm adding my voice to what Hadass has just said. And in particular, I'm thinking about the time frame in, okay, let's take computer science, for example. We have been trying really hard to hire teaching faculty. And we really suffer from the fact that we don't have the professorial title. So I can imagine that if we would be probably wanting to hire immediately at the professorial title if it is available to us. And that also says to me that we also need to have a very swift transition plan for those who are already in the lecturer position, because it would be incredibly awkward if we have current lecturers and senior lecturer while we are posting and trying to hire professorial titles.
Thank you, Daisy. I can give some sense of a potential timeline, assuming that all of this goes through smoothly this academic year, then that gives the opportunity for the Board of Trustees to have a vote on this, and presuming that then goes forward in May, then it seems to me that the very first Senate meeting in September, all of these proposals can be brought forth for a vote. So, and that would allow a college to be able to hire with this new title, to make transitions into this new title in the next academic year. So presuming that all of this goes through very smoothly in the next month or two. I don't foresee any delays beyond a college choosing when they initiate to make a proposal to the Senate.
Thanks.
Yes, Betsy, college and unit.
Excuse me. Hi, this is Betsy Lamb, and I'm the RTE rep for the College of Ag and Life Sciences. One point I just wanted to say to Hadass is you might find that you have faculty, tenure track faculty allies. So I would say get them on your side and get them asking to. Let's hope you do. And the main point that I'd like to make is because I'm an senior extension associate, thank you for the shout out about extension. We will try and get that in process going as well. But I do want to thank Michael and the task force because I think they laid a great foundation for us and already did a lot of the work. It'll be different, but some of it will be the same. And I think that will be very helpful. So thanks to Michael and all, and thanks to you, Eve, for making sure that this goes forward. And Betsy Bin is also on today, and she's one of the people that we're working on getting this going. So thank you very much.
And I can say that I'm collecting data on extension faculty right now to understand who you are, where you are in the university. And I think I'm going to run a survey and then we'll get started as well.
Great. Thank you.
Oh, Elliot, is your hand still up or is this a...
It's up again, but
go for it.
No one else is ahead of the line. Again, Elliot Shapiro, Knight Institute, and Senator at Large from Arts and Sciences. So regarding this last exchange about speed of implementation and the relative influence of RTE faculty within the colleges, I notice I'm looking at the slide with the members of the task force. And I see all those hashtags indicating associate deans. It looks like the associate deans from most of the schools and colleges were very well represented on this committee. And I would imagine that, I mean, I hope this implies a certain endorsement, at least at that level. And I guess I'd be interested to hear from Michael about if you're able to give us any sense of the level of commitment, maybe. I mean, again, I know you can't necessarily break it down and say, oh, the one from this college said this, the one from that college said that. But if you could give us a sense of where the associate deans are lining up based on your work together on your task force, I'd be grateful.
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to try to answer that. Although, as you say, it's a little awkward to not name names at the same time of doing it. However, my sense as someone who's been at all of these meetings with these people is that everyone is in favor of this. People are talking about how positive of an impact this could have for their college, how it's necessary to do this. I think the conversations sometimes, hit sticking points around the niggly little details of things like what is the right percent in my college, but that doesn't detract from the overall agreement that this is a positive path to pursue, I think, from the entire task force.
And I'm going to agree with that sentiment. When this was introduced at the academic dean's meeting, and in order for me to recruit committee members, there was a lot of enthusiasm. And I think the deans definitely felt that it was critical to be able to add this title to the approved academic titles rather than replacing lecturer, senior lecturer, and that it's really important that the colleges be able to use all five titles as they see fit. And so I think the committee has done wonderful work and very thoughtful work on that.
And if I could just add, the hard work of the committee was coming up with a proposal that everyone could stand behind, right? Finding the space to be flexible enough for all of these colleges with their own special uniqueness to be able to have a title that would work for them, yet at the same time, to have that title actually mean something, to have a title description that says there's a high level of quality, you have that impact,
you are providing service. So I think this is an exciting thing that will have a lot of support from all of these colleges.
And one of the other things I would add while we're waiting for somebody else to put their hand up is that because of the glass ceiling for a senior lecturer, some senior lecturers were put into titles that probably aren't as appropriate as the teaching professor. So some might have been moved into clinical professor or professor of the practice when really the teaching professor is more appropriate. So I think we'll see transitions from lecturer titles, but also these other RTE professorial titles as well. And if there are no other comments, that's fine. We can stop the conversation here. And just to let you know, we will be sharing this broadly. And then there's an opportunity to continue giving feedback in the Faculty Senate and for April. And then once we post this on this, actually, even now, you could go to the pending resolution and type in comments on the page as well. That's another public forum for comments on the documents that this committee has really thoughtfully produced.
I'm also happy to receive any comments directly by email. You can email me and Charlie if you would like to do it that way.
I'll let the silence sit for one more minute and then. Yes, Siobhan.
So I was wondering what the process would be like in the college. Would RTE faculty be involved in deciding what are the criteria for promotion, the benefits, and things like that? Or would it be just the associate deans? Do you know, Michael?
I can say, speaking from my own perspective in Bowers CIS, how that worked. I can't say how it would work for everyone. When we redesigned our policies around appointment, reappointment, promotion for senior lecturers and lecturers recently, which was within the last 2 years, there was a committee, there was representation from both the tenure track faculty and the RTE faculty on that committee. And we had plenty of opportunities to provide feedback. I felt like our feedback was well received and mostly heard. One of the pieces of feedback I provided very strongly during that was that it was incredibly unfair that at the same time we were doing this, we were also voting on a professor of the practice title. Well, you know what? 2 years later, here I am doing this. So I feel like I got heard.
Thank you.
And I definitely will communicate, I think, the need for this to be a cooperative, sort of collaborative process with administration in the college, tenure track, and RTE faculty. Yes, Catherine.
I'll just mention that when the professor of practice legislation came up for a vote, at least in the engineering college, and the last time I think this happened back in, I don't remember, 2014, 2015, something like that. In some sense at that point, I don't think we had a whole lot of time to read the proposal. It was, you know, sort of, I think many of us felt kind of rushed, and it was suddenly the dean of the time said, okay, you know, we're going to have a vote. And there, of course, had to be a vote among the RTE faculty. Now to the dean's credit at that time, several of us kind of ended up having a post meeting after a meeting about this, and did draft a note to the dean voicing concerns and about several elements that were in that document. And they were at least they were very receptive and responsive, to us at that time. But yes, I think you're, you know, right, Siobhanda, to just ask the question about how does the process unfold, and specifically the timing of the voting and things like that, that can be a concern.
Michael, I don't know if you want to share any discussions of timeline that came from the committee.
Could you clarify, Eve, a timeline of what in particular?
So the process for posting, voting, all of those things, what goes to CAP, that kind of.
Yeah. So to be honest, that's at the end of the enabling legislation document. And that's a place I don't read very often.
I can do it.
let's see. If you know it off the top of your head better, I know there's a 60-day comment period and I know that CAP has to review it. That's what's in my head right now.
And that's essentially right. But what CAP is essentially going to assess is if procedures were followed. You know, where the faculty are there faculty votes? Is it in the proportions that we, you know, request, where it's some 2/3 of the faculty have voted and it's in the majority approval, those kinds of things. But all of those reviews are not about the quality of the proposal, the content of the proposal, but only about the procedures. You know, did we have the appropriate numbers of people voting? Is it approved by majority, et cetera? And so, you know, the more, I guess, efficient the college is at getting this work done, as soon as the Senate votes on it, and the Senate could vote on it within the month, then that gives an opportunity for colleges to start the work and start getting the votes and the discussions amongst all constituents of the college, faculty constituents of the college. I feel like I saw one more hand. I'm not sure, though.
I don't see a hand, but I had one thing to say to Catherine and Siobhan in response, which is I'm going to take back to the task force this notion of RTE involvement in drafting the response, because we can say in the enabling legislation that the college should describe the degree to which RTE faculty were involved in this process. That might put the appropriate pressure in place.
And Xiaolong, hope I didn't mess up your name, but please. You're muted, and don't forget to give your unit in college.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. My name is Sean.
Oh, no, you're frozen. I'm
from CIA Data Science Department. I have been a senior lecturer for about over 16 years when I came. So taught a lot of courses, but I felt, you know, we are in a special group, underrepresented, like a minority group. So I really feel what, you know, people before me, they were talking about, all totally agree. But when I saw this came out, I was really excited. But I don't know how we can voice, you know, to have the university level approval, not just, you know, next level is CIS, like for me, right? So is there anything, any channel we can voice or something like that so that it can be passed?
You were breaking up, but I believe you're asking if are there things to speed up the process?
Yeah, how can we voice? So I don't know, maybe Mike has a problem or not in here.
Mike,
can you hear me?
Michael?
Oh. So I may have some problem, a technical problem here. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, we can hear you better now.
Okay, good. All right. So I was talking about, I have been a senior lecturer for over 16 years, and I felt we are in a special group, isolated, underrepresented group. And when this document, when the thing is happening, and I'm very happy, and I also talked to other lecturers, and they feel the same, and that's the right thing to do. So we are talking about, like, we are lecturers. Actually, we profess, but we're not professors, right? So that's an interesting term. So this action, personally, I would like encourage everybody, all lecturers, senior lecturers, you know, vote for that. But you're talking about there will be two votings. One is like a tenure faculty group, and another is our group.
They don't have to be separate. It's just specifying that the faculty who vote on this should not just be tenure track faculty, okay. But okay. It's all faculty.
So we should have the same rights, right? Sometimes we actually do not feel we have a right to vote for something. But this time we do, right?
And Xiaolong, these are conversations that I am having with the academic deans.
Yeah.
Just to remind them of best practices for how to be inclusive for RTE mm-hmm. faculty.
Okay.
Making sure they're listed on websites and titled with their appropriate faculty title and things uh-huh. like that. And so I am still working on that for sure.
Okay, good. So again, thank you very much for Michael, Charlie, and the committee for putting all these exciting documents together. Thanks a lot.
Michael, do you have any last comments you'd like to make before we adjourn? Oh, Betsy, before you, Michael, we'll do Betsy.
This isn't about specifically this teaching title, although I think it's valuable that this is going down this road. And as Betsy Lamb mentioned, I'm hoping we can do something similar with extension. But it's over a lot of conversations we've had, it is somewhat deeply concerning to me that across the university, there seems to be such a disrespect for RTE. Several people mentioned, not feeling valued and not feeling heard or respected or getting regularly talked down to. And I absolutely feel that myself. What is also profound to me is how many years a bunch of us have been in these positions. This is my 25th year at Cornell University. And I remember one time I was asking about, how come our days off aren't the same as faculty, even though we're faculty. And somebody in HR once told me, well, you're not supposed to be in that position long term. And I thought, that's interesting, because most people I know in my position have been in this position long term. Right. So we're people that have dedicated and one person said, it's not that I don't want to do research. In my extension position, I was flat out told you're expected to do research, even though we don't give you space, even though we don't give you funding. It's expected that you'll do research, even though you're 100% extension. So I think there's just a real disconnect. And I think to me, that's the elephant in the room here. We keep changing titles and we keep trying, but the problem isn't the title per se. It's that the positions aren't respected.
So I will say that I think I have to give the context that RTE became faculty in terms of title only a small number of years ago. So RTE titles were academic staff up until about 3-4 years ago. And I think that the RTE working group has done fabulous work at the university level, working with the chief human resources officer, academic HR, the Senate, other places to really convey that now that this transition has happened, let's correct sort of cultural problems and inclusion and climate problems on campus. And I guess in the short amount of time that I've been here, I feel like I'm seeing those changes and I'm hearing from people that those changes are happening, but there's more work to do. And I am having those conversations for sure. And I think the more that we do this, the more that the RTE working group works with different deans and senior leaders. The RTE working group met with the provost, the deputy provost, the chief human resources officer, really specifying quality of life issues that come up for RTE faculty and they're being heard. For example, the continual termination letter that happens. The human CHRO is working on, okay, what can we do about that? Because the anxiety provoking nature of those letters, what can we do about those processes? So I feel like, yes, RTE faculty have been here for a very long time, but these titles were not perceived of the appropriate status up until recently. And then we have to continue to work on climate and inclusion. Adam, unit and college, please.
Adam Anderson, professor of psychology in College of Human Ecology. So Betsy, hearing you say that hurts, but I also, one of the things that I've been at Cornell much less time than you, 10 years now, maybe 11 years. And I think what you experience also occurs between professors. There's just, we don't have the compassion and appreciation for each other as much as humans that I just think that we need. I know that seems, it might seem specific to your position, but I have been mistreated as a faculty member too, in ways, I just think it's a kind of spirit of lack of camaraderie and mutual appreciation that we just need more of. So that you're aware of these things, the title change will help, but there is a bit of a cultural change too, unfortunately. There's a lot of supremacy in this profession. We see it all the time. I hate that part of this profession. You know, I'm a human, I'm a dad, I'm, you know, a friend, all of those things before being PhD expert. So the sad part is many of us deeply appreciate the work done by all faculty and staff here, but there is, you know, we battle with an Ivy League supremacist attitude, and that just doesn't go away easily. I know that's not comforting, but, you know, this is one of the things we must all collectively battle and try to, you know, I think the positions that you have, like, they're really important. We just need to have more collective support and conversations. So I appreciate the work done by this committee. And I know there are a number of, you know, as a full professor, I love knowing this, and these issues are not always obvious to us. We all need to work together to solve this problem. So I just wanted to add that to the conversation, the sad part and the good part. Thank you all.
And with that, thank you everyone for attending this meeting, and really appreciate your feedback. And if there are additional comments that you'd like to share with the T4 working group, please send them to Michael Clarkson or Charlie Van Loan or to the Office of Dean of Faculty, and we'll make sure that they receive them so that they can be integrated into whatever documents ultimately come to the Senate in April. And everyone, enjoy the sunshine. I see blue sky outside. And thank you so much. Bye.